The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just finished a three-game set against the Cleveland Guardians, dropping two games out of three. They now fall to 14-12 on the season, and they currently sit in third place in the American League East. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Mass., is Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm good, Jason. Another Guardian series, so it's going to be a little repetitive here, but I'm excited.
Yeah, they seem to have our number, unfortunately, so hopefully it's a while before we see them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And where can people find you on Twitter, Jeremy?
At JT Schill 20. Awesome. JT Schill 20.
JT Schill 20. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Another butt kicking from the Guardians. And I had the Red Sox winning two of the games, so kind of let me down there. But you can find my personal account on Twitter at CushmanMLB. The podcast account is Bastards_Boston. That is the much busier account of the two. And I can be found on Facebook at Terry Talks Sox. We have an Instagram account, and we're still messing with YouTube. So we're pretty broad when it comes to content across the platforms.
Yep. Either way, there is no shortage of way to find us. So that's the good news. But yeah, like Jeremy said, it's kind of a little bit of a flashback. We're kind of in a time machine. We're back talking about another Guardian series, another series loss here on the midweek show. But that's just the way it goes. This Guardians team is a little bit better than I think some of us thought. Certainly myself. Weren't sure how the transition was going to go from Francona to Stephen Vogt. But they've got a pretty good team there. And so far, the Red Sox are, you know, a little bit Jekyll and Hyde. There are days where, you know, offense really explodes. They look great. And then there are other days like the series finale where they just look miserable. And we're going to talk about some of that misery coming up with our bottom five list. So let's not waste any time. Our bottom five players for this series coming in at number five, Jeremy, who's leading us off.
Yeah, it's going to be Duran. I think he's fifth because he's been good and a game breaker for the majority of the month of April, but he is in it right now. So the stats quickly, 1-for-14 with 7 Ks, and he's hitting .255. So one or two episodes ago that I was involved in, we talked about how he can be such a game breaker, and specifically he can just wreak havoc. You can't steal first base. So if he can get on first base, he's a flight risk right away. The ball doesn't need to go far from the bag for him to advance to third, and then you're a sac fly away from a run without, you know, sometimes without a hit, depending on how he gets on first base. He forces infielders to hurry up, and that's never a good thing. Forcing throws, so, you know, you'll see him get on from time to time when he's going well with the first baseman have to come off the bag to catch the ball or what. It's not happening. None of it's happening. He's a 50% whiff rate in this series. One hit, didn't draw a walk, one RBI, hit an RBI today. So if he, you know, I don't know why Rafael let off on in the Hauk start, but he did. Other than that, Duran's been your leadoff guy all year. You really need him to get going because the lineup's not good enough. And, you know, now with that said, with Duran hitting 1-for-14, they were 32-for-106 this series, which is a 301 clip. So it wasn't terrible, and I think we'll hopefully talk about some of the guys that contributed, but Duran just wasn't one of them.
Terry.
I'm the biggest Duran guy on this crew, his biggest apologist, but he's on a bit of a cold streak right now. As Jeremy pointed out, 1-for-14 with 7 strikeouts. The strikeouts are pretty alarming. I think they always are, regardless of which player it is. But then in the previous series against the Pirates, which wasn't a, you know, overpowering pitching staff by any means, he was 2-for-13, only struck out a couple of times there. He hasn't driven in a run since the final game of the last Indian series, Guardian series. So, and it was just that 2 runs in that finale. So he hasn't been very productive in a number of ways for a little while now, basically the second half of April here. So going back to last year, which was his breakout season, we never saw like a painful prolonged slump. And I think we're about one series away from basically being there with him. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can kind of, you know, reignite that fuse and be the spark plug at the top of the order that he has been for quite some time. And the Red Sox desperately need him to be that guy. So not a great series for him. We got the Cubs next. We're going to have some decent pitching in that series, so we'll see. It'll be encouraging if he can step it up against them.
Yeah, I certainly hope that this is one of the few times that Duran is on a bottom five list, because I'm a big fan of him too. He is the catalyst of your offense at the top of the order there. I don't necessarily bag on him too much for his current slump and this series in particular, and we'll touch on it later, but I think there are other issues that are affecting Jaron Duran right now. So, you know, he's definitely a guy that when he's in a slump, though, the Ks go way, way up. And it's, again, he's a guy that's going to press. He doesn't want to be in a slump. It gets in his head a little bit, and he kind of presses and starts swinging at pitches outside the zone, and it can get to him. So that is a bit of an alarming thing that, you know, even when he's in a slump, that he can't just keep the same approach. He kind of gets jumpy at the plate and tries to do too much. One thing that was encouraging, though, is that he made a really nice play in center field in the finale, made a sliding catch, jumped up, threw to second base, got the force out there. That was a really nice play to see. And that's a play that, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, we weren't sure he could make. So if he's growing into that center field role, that's going to be huge, because Cora basically told you today or yesterday that Rafaela is your everyday shortstop, and that's the way it's going to be. So if Duran's going to be your everyday center fielder now, seeing him make plays like that is very encouraging. So he did slump at the plate, but he still kind of showed out well. He's a guy that, you know, he's going to be important going forward. So I just hope they take care of him. And if he needs a day off, give it to him, because he relies on speed. And if he's losing the jump out of his legs because he's tired, then you need to sit him for a day. As much as he may not want to, and as much as the Red Sox may not want to, it might be good for him, because I can't remember the last time he had a day off. It may have been recently, I don't know, but it feels like he's been going for a while. And with the finale being the day game after a night game and with no day off afterwards, you kind of think that's a good opportunity to maybe give him, you know, a rest, maybe just have him available to pinch hit or pinch run or something like that. But it just feels like it's been a while. So it, you know, he's in a slump right now. He's pressing a little bit. I'm not super worried about him. I think he's going to be just fine. I think that, you know, the Chicago series coming back home to Boston, that'll be a good opportunity for him to kind of get things going again. So that's why he's in at number 5. Tough series for him, but ultimately going forward, I am not super concerned about Jaron Duran. Terry.
Couple of quick tidbits. I just went through every series I had, and if he had a day off, he would have a long line going through that day's line. And I think he's played every game. So
he has. I checked on MLB.
Oh, okay. And the
he's
other
all 26.
The other nugget before we turn it over to Jeremy, he actually is leading the Red Sox with strikeouts at 29. I would have assumed, I would have put money on it being Rafaela. who has struck out three times less. But so the strikeouts definitely need to come down for Duran.
I mean, that he's leading the Red Sox because he gets one at-bat more than the bottom of the lineup, and he's played in all 26 games, so that's probably 26 at-bats.
True.
Or more, because I think Rafael has had a couple days off. When he was last at Fenway, and I'd like to see how his approach changes back in Boston starting tomorrow, assuming he plays. I think he will get a day off this weekend. When he's hitting the ball in all three fields, you know, and in that last series in Boston, I think he had two doubles down the line. One was just a slicing line drive and the other was off the base of the wall. It seems like when he went on the road, he lost that approach, and we're getting either the strikeout with 50% whiff rate, so there's not a lot of balls in play anyways, but it seems like it's a lazy one or two hopper to the right side when he is putting the ball in play. And that's always concerning, that it's about the approach. So I don't worry so much about the slump. I don't see him going into Dahlback territory, but I don't mind if he's not getting hits, but let's see some hard contact to left field, to center field, and you know, make, again, he's so dynamic on the bases. Hard contact may not result in a hit, but it may result with him on base. So let's barrel a couple balls and spray it like he was a week ago. You know, and I'm sure that that's something that they're going to go over in preparation for the next series.
Yeah, 100%. Because even if he hits a sharp ground ball to the second baseman, if it's hit hard enough and he boots it a little bit, that's all Jaren Duran needs. All he needs is one little mistake, and he can beat that out to first base.
Well, and I'd like to see that up the middle and towards the third base bag, because they're longer throws. And, you know, those are going to be slicing balls that are harder to play. I know it's the big league level and they're made more often than they're not, but with his speed and a rush defender, it's when he's getting going, it's not all hits, guys. He's getting on, he's forcing the defense to make errors, and, you know, so I'm looking forward to him getting going, because we're right on the precipice of playing a little bit better baseball. You know, we got Ref Schneider back and he's contributing, so the depth is evening out a little bit. We may talk about Devers and how it's forcing Yoshida off the field, but we're starting at least with the lineup to get healthy again. So if he can get going at the top, it's a spark plug for the whole lineup.
Yep, absolutely.
And one last thing on Duran. You know, I want to compare him to Ellsbury so bad. Like, that's where what's that?
I said, please don't.
Well, Ellsbury was pretty good if you go through the numbers, and we got rid of him right at the right time. You know, the Yankees got the front row seat to his decline. But
I think Duran's upside's better than Ellsbury, but that's just.
Well, what I was about to get at was Ellsbury was a very high on base guy. You know, always 340, 350. I don't know what it ended up at, you know, when his career wound down. But in some years, I think he was up as high as 370. So if the walk numbers would just go up with Duran, I feel like all the rest of the numbers would go up. You know, the hits, the doubles and all that. So I've been preaching that for a while. It's probably like the 20th time I've given that take. But if we could just get that out of him. You know, I just think we'd be that much better off.
Yeah, agreed. So with that, we'll move on to another slumping bat in the lineup, coming in at number four on our bottom five. Terry, who's coming in at number four?
Number four is Robert Vernon Dahlbeck. Yes, that's his name. Rick Porcello had the weirdest name ever. Like, it's like, where did that come from? But anyway, that was random. So Dahlbeck, first base, for the most part, he was playing third for a little while. Has gotten some hits, but still not the guy you want up when runners are on base, because they're going to get stranded. And I feel like not so much this series necessarily, but previously he was always coming up with two outs and runners on, and it was so painful. And today he was pulled early. I want to say that was for Sanchez, or Sanchez, McGuire, Reese McGuire. Ah, man. I was listening in the car because it was a day game, but so he had a short leash today, and first base right now, we discussed it a little bit on the midweek show. It's a black hole. I mean, he's up, and it sucks that he's up, but who do you put there? I mean, Reyes had a couple of games there and was fine. I think you could possibly put Valdez there if you had to, but there's just nobody. And as of a couple of days ago, we were talking to CJ Krohn, which 3 years ago would have been amazing, but he had a terrible year last year and then got hurt. And then he's been a free agent since he opted out at the end of spring training. So he hasn't been swinging a bat in a little while. So I don't see, if Casas is going to be out 2 months, I just don't see the value in bringing in a guy like Krohn. There were a couple other names we kicked around. I thought Josh Bell could be a name if the Marlins wanted to make a move, but he's getting paid way too much money. 17 a year. That's what the Marlins gave him. So I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do, but right now we're wearing it with Dahlbeck. And as I've said many times, so many things had to go wrong this winter. A domino effect of things had to go wrong to make it possible for him to even make the roster. Last December, I'm like, no way is he going to be in the organization by opening day. They're either going to DFA him to get someone else into the 40-man, or they're just going to trade him for a bag of baseballs and wish him the best. But I just, first base is the easiest position to resolve. And right now we got no answers.
Yeah. So sorry. Dahlbeck's like the ninth hitter on a little league team that plays right field and you just feel bad for him. Cause I just, like, he punched out today and he's walking back to the dugout. And my thought process is, I can't imagine what's going through his head. And he just looks like just lost. Like, I just, his mental has to be destroyed. And it results in a guy who can't get it done. He was 2-for-9 in the series. So, you know, with a double. So he was a little bit better about putting the ball in play, 2 Ks. So, and he's playing defense, a good defense at first. Devers is off third, so third base has been a little bit better. So the defensive side of things is improved just because Devers isn't at third, which I put this in the group chat. It was met with some mixed emotions. But I really think once Devers' knee is healthy enough to play in the field, I'd be interested if maybe once he starts to get healthy, we hear him taking ground balls at first. And forces, you know, a move that they don't want to make with their $300 million man. I don't see where he's like, Duran's going to turn it around. The next time we're on, Duran's going to be better. There's no indication that Dahlbeck's going to be better. He's just, I feel bad for him. I want him to be successful. But it just, there's no indication that he's going to be able to come out of this at the big league level. And as to trading him, what could possibly be his value? You know, you're not nothing. Going to get an asset that's ever going to see the big leagues. You're going to get the high A guy throwing 96, but can't throw strikes. Like whatever asset you get back is a complete shot in the dark. So he's going to get DFA'd here in the near future, unless something changes. You know, one of the things they mentioned on the broadcast, I think it was last night, it could have been today, is he needs to get into one. And I don't care if he, like the right fielder on the Little League team, closes his eyes and just, you know, has the swing of his life. But he needs to get into one and take a deep breath and start working the other way with the mental side of his approach, because he's just so locked up. And, you know, I think we've all been there at some point in our, you know, where things just aren't going right and it snowballs and you just can't find a way to turn it around. I feel terrible for him. But at some point, if this team is looking at being competitive this year, you can't keep him around. I don't think he's part of the future. So it's not like you're going to Rafaela him and just put him in there to do his thing and hope he grows. That doesn't make any sense either. So it's too bad. It's too bad. What was it? 3 years ago, he had 20 bombs and 76 ERA, or 25 bombs and 76 ribbies. Like, where's that guy? You know, he's not old enough to be on the downside of his career. So,
well, believe it or not, Devers is 2 years younger than him.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah. Devers came up early and Bobby came up later. I think Devers was 20 when he debuted. So,
yeah, Dahlbeck was a late bloomer. And 2021, like you said, yeah, he had 25 bombs and he looked like, you know, a legit kind of, you know, even though he was a late bloomer, a legit power hitter. And then it just all went downhill. And what's really annoying is that he still had value even after last season because his AAA numbers were really good. So you could have possibly have gotten a team to take a chance on him and say, well, they never really called him up. He never got a shot in the big leagues, but look at what he did down in AAA. Maybe he's turned a corner. Maybe he needs a change of scenery. Let's take a shot on him. But the Red Sox just kept him. They you know, just kept him around, brought him back to spring training. And this is partially why, you know, he was their Casas insurance, which that's not good enough. That's not good enough Casas insurance. And I think it's really a red flag that, you know, we know Casas is going to be out at least 2 months. And that's the hope, that it's just at least 2 months, because with a fracture, like, if it doesn't heal the right way, it could be longer. And the fact that, you know, a guy like Garrett Cooper is out there and they're not going to go after him. Garrett Cooper just got DFA. They could easily just go pick him up. It would cost you basically nothing. And it doesn't feel like they're going to do that. And, you know, I hear people talk about, oh, we'll just wait because there's the May 1st opt-outs are coming. Have you seen the list of guys who could potentially opt out May 1st? It's like Mike Moustakas, Eduardo Escobar, and what's left of Joey Votto in terms of the first base position. There's not a superstar, or there's not, you know, at least a MLB caliber player coming off that list. So if they're not going to go out and get a guy like Cooper, and they're really going to stick with Dahlbeck for the stretch of two and a half months that Casas is out, then they are telling you they don't care about winning games. They don't. They don't care, because this guy is such a black hole in your lineup that, you know, in first base is such a premium position. If they gave a damn about competing this season, they would make a move. They would have to look at what Dahlbeck's doing at the plate and go, we can't have this for 2 months. We can't do it. Because, and Jeremy, you said this in the group chat, and it's true, they don't have the luxury to say, well, we can just kind of, you know, stay 500 or below for 2 months and we'll still be okay. No, they need to win a lot of games. They need to win them early, because they're just, their roster's not good enough. And the rest of the league around them is so good and improved so much in the offseason that they really need to, they can't afford to just keep losing series and having Dahlbeck going 2 for 10, striking out all the time, and say, well, it's okay. You know, we'll hold our water and we'll still be there at the end. No, you probably won't be. So I feel bad for Dahlbeck. I do, because I do think he gives a damn and I think he does try. And certainly on defense, he's great over there at first. He made a couple of really nice plays in this series, but he just doesn't have it at the plate. He doesn't have it. And I don't know if it's just he needs that change of scenery, or like you said, he just needs to run into one to kind of see one go over the fence and say, okay, I still got it, and maybe wake him up a bit. But right now, it's untenable for him to be playing first base for this stretch of time.
So just quickly, Terry, and then I'll turn it over to you. The only other option as I see fit is for Cora to sit down, Breslow to sit down with him in the office and say, we are 100% behind you. You're going to be in the lineup every day. Give him that reinforcement so that he could take a deep breath and go approach the game not so like just locked up tight. Like, go give him a vote of confidence. You don't even have to believe in it. You know, we could DFA him in a week, but at least go tell him that he's the guy, and give him a chance to mentally, you know, relax. It's just, he's so, I just can't imagine, you know, but I mean, that's it. I mean, that's the only other option, because there's nothing great outside the organization. You're not going to trade top assets to go get a guy for the future because Casas is coming back. I don't see a reason coming into the season. You used Casas insurance. I don't think you need Casas insurance. I mean, was durability an issue with him? I thought he was going to be your everyday first baseman. And, you know, we have so many other holes. I think this is to show that they didn't expect to have this issue. And so they didn't address it. And then now this is the this is the byproduct of an unfortunate injury, you know. But Cassis will be back. And I personally think we're going to see Dahl back a lot. I think he's going to keep playing. And I think if he doesn't hit, he's just not going to hit.
So real quick, and disclaimer, we all know I'm not Mr. Prospects expert. You know, if it's not the elite ones anyway. Just looking at Worcester's stats right now, they have a first baseman named Nico Cavadas. I just checked, he is not on the 40 man, but the way to resolve that is to toss off Casas and then, you know, put this guy into his spot. You could also get rid of Romy Gonzalez if you want. And so there's options as far as DFAing people, but we have a first baseman in Worcester. His name is Nico Cavadas. I've seen his name in tweets. I don't know a ton about him. His numbers at the moment are pretty impressive with just an 18-game sample size. 4 home runs. He's batting .271 with a .446 on base. So roughly his on base is 170 points, roughly above his average. Give him a shot. Why not? Another option, you have a third baseman. Decent numbers, not quite as good. Just a couple of home runs, but he's hitting .254 with a .372 on base. His name is Jamie Westbrook. I have never heard of him at all. I've heard of Cavadas, never heard of Westbrook. A guy like Westbrook, I don't think you're worried about protecting at all, really. You know, I don't think he's ever going to see the light of day outside of a situation like this. So maybe you bring him up. When we called up Travis Shaw, this is going back about 10 years. I don't think anybody could have foreseen the impact he had in a short amount of time. So maybe you can recreate a situation like that. But and you have these guys internally and money isn't an option. Another thing, I didn't quite have enough time to look it up. You mentioned Joey Votto's opt-out. Oh, man. I might give that a shot. I mean, he's 40. He's born in 1983, just like me. But
he's going to go to a contender.
Well, he's in Toronto's AAA affiliate. I don't see any lines for him, so I don't know if he's had any game action. He might be hurt. I didn't have enough time to look it up, but if he was swinging a decent at bat, I might. I mean, just bringing a guy like Votto into the clubhouse would be amazing. I feel like
for a younger roster to have that veteran presence, I don't disagree. I think he's toast. And what's the incentive for Votto to come here to collect a small paycheck? I don't know. The only so you solved the 40 man issue, Terry, by DFAing Dahlbeck. So that I mean it's. You know, put him in and whoever you're going to put on the roster. Westbrook's 5'7". That's a really small target.
Oh, so yeah. Okay.
I don't think that's going to be an option.
No.
You want to go with the AAA first baseman. I don't know anything about him. You know, if you just recited his numbers. They're good. If you get a fraction of that, it's better than Dahlbeck.
If he's not an automatic out, call him up. that's where we're at. Do you have a pulse? Yes. Are you an automatic out? No. All right, let's do it.
Well, you got to be able to play big league defense too. And I don't know enough about the player to say whether he can or he can't. But if he can play big league defense and, you know, he's not going to be a complete matchup nightmare with a guy that can pump it, then, you know, if they feel like he has a chance to be competitive at the big league level, it's better than what you're getting from Dahlbeck. You know, anyways.
Yeah, and I think Dahlbeck's glove is going to be a big reason why he does – see a lot of playing time over there because he does play good defense. And I think Cora with, you know, naming Rafael the full-time shortstop, stuff like that, I think he's really harping on playing good defense because I think he's seen enough of them losing games because of their defense early on. So,
well, look, your starting pitcher pitching has been so good. The only way to really neutralize that is not catch the ball. So if your starting pitching is going to be really good and you can play defense, you're going to steal a lot of games with 3 to 4 runs.
It's true. Yep. Absolutely. So moving on to number three on our bottom five, another member of the offense, Terry, who do we got at number three?
We have Emmanuel Valdez. This guy, as Jason would say, blows. This guy is just terrible. 0-4-9 on the series, struck out five times, so more than half. Going back a series against the lowly Pirates, where is he? 2-11. Lots of strikeouts there as well. The defense has been a little bit better. He had some errors in the first couple of weeks, so I can't toast him for his defense, but the dude's a zero right now. He doesn't have a future in Major League Baseball. The only reason he's on a big league roster right now is because the Red Sox are trash. And fortunately, we do have Vaughn Grissom rehabbing down in Worcester. And he has had, 22 at-bats across seven games. Numbers aren't great at first glance. He's hitting .227 with a .346 on base. No home runs. But he was 0-7 in his first two games. So wipe those out. The numbers look a little bit more respectable. Having said that, I mean, even if he gets another week of rehab, I forget how many games it is. It might be 14. There is a limit to how many games they can do unless they have a setback. You can restart the clock. But so I'd be shocked if he's not up by not this coming weekend, but the following weekend. And you got a righty bat. Connor Wong is swinging it right now. If this was a top five series, he'd be on that list. Third in MLB right now among catchers in OPS, by the way. And there's a couple other categories. But Wong, O'Neill, then you could potentially have Grissom up. Suddenly, you're looking a little bit more formidable as far as the righties go, but Valdez is a massive zero. And when he gets sent back down, I never want to see him again under any circumstances. I never want to see him again. Bring up someone else. Bring up a middle infielder I haven't even heard of. I don't want to see any more Emmanuel Valdez.
So let me pose a question to you, because I'm going to get to Valdez, but I want to talk about Connor Wong. Are we just beyond the days where you have an everyday catcher that plays 5 days a week?
I would say so.
Yeah. Cause to me, Wong is a smaller catcher. He takes extremely good care of himself by his physique. I'd like to see him playing a little bit more often. You know, maybe that's a question for a different time. Go ahead, Terry, answer my question.
Well, he did get some reps at first today. And perhaps there's a solution. If you want to do that every day, then now you have to bring up another catcher, but that shouldn't be a problem.
I'm talking about him catching. If you have seven games in a week, he gets five of them. Tell me why that's a bad idea.
No, that's good. I mean, that's a day off every third or fourth day. I mean, I think that's normal.
And McGuire has two bombs, but that's not who he is. He's not going to hit 20 home runs, I don't think. Connor's got some pop, and he'll walk into one a couple times a week, it feels like, at least early in the season, or at least he's a threat to do it. He's much more athletic defender. I don't know. I'm a Connor Wong guy, and I'd like to see him play. This is not the Connor Wong segment, but you brought him up, so I wanted to chime in there. All right. Valdez is a problem. And let me tell you why. Of the position players that played in this series, five are hitting below the Mendoza line. Rafaela, who's not going anywhere. Valdez, who we're talking about now. Dahlbeck, who we've already talked about. Reyes and Hamilton. Guys, we got to figure this out. We've got to move on from a couple of these players and put people in that can have representative offense. There's just too many automatic outs on a team that already doesn't have a real superstar. I guess Devers is, but you know what I mean? It was different back in the Manny Ortiz era to have a defensive player hit ninth that didn't hit. That's a different story. That's a hole in your lineup. We have half the lineup can't hit on a given night. Valdez, to me, is an automatic out, and I think Rafael is not going anywhere. I think he's the most replaceable, where you could see if you can't either manipulate the big league roster and figure it out, or, you know, Grissom comes back and he can play. That's great too. But he's a problem, but he's part of a 1-in-5 problem. So Rafael, it gives you plus defense. Obviously that's not who Valdez is. I've talked about this in the past. I'm a big fan of up the middle defense, especially how I've already highlighted supports your strength, which right now is your starting pitching. Catch the goddamn ball, you know? So there's got to be an answer there. There just has to be an answer there. Your right side of your infield right now is barely hitting over 100.
And the thing about Valdez is we all knew the glove was a problem. When the Red Sox first traded for him and Abreu, the book on Valdez was he can hit, he's got pop in his bat, but the glove is a problem. And really, everyone said it's either second base or DH for him because he cannot play anywhere else, which is kind of a weird scouting report on a guy that he can only play those two positions. But it's a bit Dan Uggla-ish. But that's the thing. The bat was supposed to be the selling point, and the bat's not there right now. I mean, he's got his strikeout to walk ratio is 23-4. And he's just whiffing all over the place. The power's not there. He's not stringing together enough consistent good at bats to leave him in there at second base. So look, Vaughn Grissom is on his way. I hope that he's there at Fenway for the Cubs series, because it feels like the guy's had like 10 or 12 rehab games at this point. Like, it feels like he's been rehabbing forever. And the problem with Grissom is the bat is supposedly legit. It's a good right-handed bat, but he's a disaster defensively too. He had a -7 DRS with Atlanta last year, and they tried him out at second base and shortstop, and he couldn't play either. So they're going to have to really work with Grissom when he gets back up here, but the hope is that at the very least he'll hit. And if they can somewhat improve the defense with him, then you're headed somewhere. But there's still a concern there, because if his glove is no better than it was last year, then you're looking at just right-handed Emmanuel Valdez. So the second base, I think second base is still an issue, even if Grissom comes back, because his bat better be like, he better be hitting like 280 with some pop consistently, because otherwise, like, I just feel like the defense he's going to bring is not going to be much better. And it's just going to be the same problem with a different name on the back of the uniform.
I don't worry about the average so much, Jason, as I worry about the on-base percentage and the slugging. You know, are you OPS? Are you, you know, driving the ball and you getting on base? I mean, one of my favorite players is, I'm spacing on his name, lefty stick leadoff from in Philly right now, played with Boston from the area. Oh, my God. Schwarber. Schwarber was like a 200 hitter, but he's going to drive in 100 runs. He's going to get on base at a decent clip. Like, I could care less what your batting average is, just an anecdote there. Here's where now I'm getting frustrated at listening to the both of you speak on it. It's a position without a plan within the organization. How many spots can we have like that? It's utterly ridiculous that there's no plan. And I'm like Terry, I'm not a big prospects guy. Like, I know the key guys, and my wife's from Worcester, so I don't go to a couple of those games a year, but like, where's the plan at this position, just generally speaking? It's so frustrating. I'm just sitting here shaking my head the whole time, annoyed by the fact that we have so many positions like this.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because Duran came up as a second baseman. Now he's an outfielder by necessity, really, is how that happened. Rafaela is now back to the infield after having played outfield for most of the upper levels of the minors. Devers is off a third right now, and you're having non-third basemen playing third base. So you had your catcher playing first base today. It's just like, it's a mess. And defense just hasn't been a priority going back to Bloom. And now we got Breslow, and it's really not. And Jason mentioned what the book was for Grissom, and Atlanta was going to make him an outfielder. Tentatively, before the Chris Sale trade materialized, he was going to be playing left field. And his bat is good enough to try to find a solution. Like, he could be a good productive hitter, probably out of the two-hole, really. He could be a two-hole hitter. But it's just, it's goofy. It's goofy. And we're still paying $17 million of Chris Sale's salary this year. So we'll see what happens. I'm excited to see Grissom because it's not Valdez, and we need some excitement here, and maybe he'll provide a little bit of spark. Yeah. And one thing, going back to Connor Wong, I agree that he should be the catcher, like, most of the time. But you are so thin that, generally speaking, his right-handed bat should be in the lineup by hook or by crook. Even if McGuire, and I like McGuire. I mean, he's been a 270 hitter the last couple of years. He's scrappy. He's had some key, late-inning singles that have driven in runs. He's the best backup catcher I think you could possibly have. I mean,
I don't have a problem with him as a backup catcher. I mean, one of the things is, if Wong's athletic enough to find an alternative spot for him, Wong saves his legs by being at first base, or he's played some second base. And then if you get a lead in the sixth or seventh, you put him behind the plate, you put in defense at that spot. So, I mean, that could be an option. But that's just, it's
he's your best right-handed hitter.
This is a big league club, and these are not big league conversations. It's very frustrating.
He's your best right-handed hitter at the moment.
If O'Neill starts going again, he's
then
got more pop. My problem with McGuire is he had a bad game defensively today. He threw somebody out. He had another one where I think it was Valdez just didn't catch the ball. I think the ball hit the bag and he didn't catch it. So that could have been, the throw was ahead of the runner. But he had another one where he went to pop and throw, and the ball flipped out of his glove, and Ramirez, I think, was on third and scored on that. He got a throwing error at some point. Maybe it was on that play I'm referencing. He doesn't have enough pop in his bat. He's a backup catcher, Terry. You're right on that.
Yeah, but
I don't have a problem with him as a backup catcher. If you're playing six games, he should get two of them. If you're playing seven, he should get two of them. Wong's your starting catcher. If you have to add a day for McGuire because it's late in the season and Wong's slumping to give him some rest, that's fine. But he should be playing more than he is.
I don't disagree with that.
Well, and that'll bring us to number two on our bottom five, because there's one guy who can make a lot of those decisions, and we decide to throw him in our bottom five because, frankly, I'm frustrated with him, and I think a lot of Red Sox fans are at the moment, and that's the manager, Alex Cora. The playing around with Yoshida and everything that's going on there is getting super weird. So Cora, the last couple of days said, okay, we want to get Devers back in there, but we're easing him in because he's, he had the bruise and he's still not feeling 100%. Okay, fine. So he DH'd one game. And then Cora said, well, Yoshida will be back in tomorrow. Devers will be at third, whatever. Devers shows up to the ballpark, says, I don't feel comfortable playing third base. So he DHs him again. Yoshida's out of the lineup again. But it's not just this series. Yoshida's barely played this season. I mean, it feels like Cora is just, if Cora is forced to find a place for him to play, like in the field, he won't play him. He'll sit him on the bench in favor of like Pablo Reyes, David Hamilton, and Manuel Valdez. Like, and it's just, there's ways he could have done it. We talked about Duran at the start of this show. In game three of that series, Duran could have used a day off. Again, day game after a night game, He hasn't had a day off all season. He's clearly in the middle of a slump. You've got Yoshida wasting away on the bench. His bat was at least starting to wake up a little bit in the Pittsburgh series. Why not just put Duran on the bench, put Yoshida in left, you know, put Abreu in center? I know it's not ideal, but it's not terrible. Instead, it's like, no, let's keep Duran in there and let's put, you know, David Hamilton in the lineup. And, you know, old Devers has to DH. He can't play third base. Okay, then put Dahlbeck at third because he can play that position. Put Ref Snyder at first and make Yoshida the DH. Why not do that? It's just there's so many different options for Cora here that he could have done, and he's not doing them. And, you know, you talked about Connor Wong not getting enough playing time. I mean, I get it. He's trying to platoon the catchers a little bit. He doesn't want to wear down Connor Wong too much, but it's just the guys that Cora is choosing to play, I mean, and the guys that he's putting in the middle of the lineup are just, they're not big leaguers. And you get into these series where it's like, you know, you're split going into the final game. Like, you know, Tristan McKenzie's a decent pitcher, but he's a guy you can take. You know, the Red Sox put up some runs against him. Imagine if you had Yoshida in the lineup today. You might have scored even more. You might have had a chance to win that game. It's just, there are times where I feel like Cora is not managing to win, and he's more just managing to stay afloat. And that's a problem for this team this year. They can't afford to just stay afloat. They have to be aggressive, and he has to treat a lot of these games like, no, we've got to win, because the Red Sox are going to have to fight from the bottom up now, especially with all the injuries they've got. And I just don't feel like Cora is putting the best lineups out there every day. And again, like, the roster is flawed, but what I don't want my manager doing is putting out bad lineups and then after the game complaining about the roster and saying, well, you know, we're limited in what we got. Like, no, make the best of what you've got. You've got, you know, a $15 million outfielder on your bench who's barely played, whose bat was starting to heat up, and you refuse to put him out there because you're, what, scared of his glove? It just doesn't make any sense. So Cora's got to wake up a little bit. And I know that, you know, his situation is weird, you know, with the contract and everything, but, like, try to manage to win at least once. Like, it just feels like he's already slipping into the habits he was in last year, where he just kind of threw his arms up and said, well, the roster's bad, what do you want me to do? And he's just kind of punting on games early on here in April. So I don't know. I expect more from him. A lot of people praise him as being, you know, one of the best managers in the game. And so far this year, I'm just not seeing it. It just hasn't been there yet.
So, Jason, I'm going to disagree with you respectfully. I think the Duran being in the lineup is a product of him trying to win. He knows he's the catalyst to the offense going, and he's hoping that Duran guy takes care of himself, that he can play every day. Because there's one thing you said, I wrote this quote down. I don't remember the exact part of it, but you said there's guys in the lineup that, quote, they aren't big leaguers. A lot of this is not his problem. He is being dealt a really bad hand, okay? And another thing you said was that he's complaining about the roster. To me, that's because he's kind of in the pre-interview process for other teams. And the other side, and this is my opinion, he's right. The Yoshida thing is a product of a completely unbalanced roster. Someone, Terry, said that Emmanuel Valdez is either a second baseman or a DH. Like, we don't have enough DHs. We don't have enough athleticism. We don't have enough guys that can field their position at a consistent big league rate. And he is in a terrible spot. He's got five guys this week that had at-bats that are hitting less than 200. I get what you're saying, and I get that the manager on a frustrating team is going to be a punching bag, and I think he's signed up for that. But I'm a core guy. I've stated that. I want him here in the future. The roster blows. And he is trying, in my opinion, to do the absolute best he can with what's being dealt. What I'd like to know is how much say does he have over who's on the big league roster? Like, if he's saying, go get that guy at AAA and get Bobby out of here, Dahlbeck, and they're not doing it, then that just strengthens my position. If he has no say, I mean, I just don't fault the way he's doing things, because he doesn't have a roster where he can plug and play and have flexibility, because he's got an athletic group of guys. It's just not that. Now, if he does have a say, then he has a lot of culpability. I just don't think that's the case.
Terry.
I'm not a core guy. And sometimes you're just looking for a rhyme or reason when it comes to certain things. And I don't see why Yoshida couldn't get a start at DH. I don't know why Tyler O'Neill, who looked fine a couple of days before he was activated, ripping the ball in the batting cage, why he couldn't go directly back into right field. Maybe with Devers, you're going to be a little bit more cautious, but it just seems like, I mean, today O'Neill and Yoshida were out of the lineup. So Devers was the only one of the three, and it just feels like you're only getting one of the three. Every time this lineup comes out, I'm like, man, that's our lineup. And you go back to previous years, I mean, we're the most well-rested last place team of all time. I props to Duran for playing every day, but I think Cora comes up with creative ways to lose. Today, we're going to get into him in a minute, but you had a guy on the mound that didn't have it. Bernardino was warming. The Grand Slam happens. Then Bernardino comes in and gets the out on one pitch. And the inning's over. So
you're stealing my take.
It's hard to really grill Cora with this roster the way that it is. Now, I'll say this. I don't think he does have a ton of say. I'm sure he gives a little bit of input when moves happen between who we call up, who we send down. But what I am confident of is that he is 100% responsible for that lineup card. I don't think Breslow or any of the nerds from upstairs come to him and say, listen, you need to start so-and-so today, and he needs to bat here. When Rafaela, for some reason, is leading off, that's a Cora decision. In what universe is Rafaela a leadoff hitter? I don't get it. Bobby Dahlbeck was hitting fifth at some point last week, protecting Tristan Casas. I don't get it. I just don't get it sometimes. And I'll say this over and over again. I'm never going to hate Alex Cora like I hated John Farrell. But I don't know. I'm kind of looking forward to a new guy doing the post games with the media.
Yeah, it seems like the shine is wearing off a little bit, and it's early on. It's giving a sense of like sort of, okay, time's running out here, because it's just getting more and more frustrating that not bringing in Bernardino against Ramirez in the finale made no sense to me. It just, you knew your pitcher didn't have it, and you left him out there against the best player on that team with the bases loaded. It just, I don't know. Just a little bit out to lunch on that one. So, but he certainly wasn't the biggest problem, and you kind of alluded to it. Number one on our bottom five, Jeremy, take us home.
Well, you guys stole my thunder a little bit, but it's Chase Anderson. I'm a core guy, and I think any manager, even the best Hall of Fame managers, Terry Francona being one of the top on my list, although he was really good at this, lose in the moment, feel for the game. There is absolutely no rational basis to have Chase Anderson pitch to Ramirez. I said it, I think, the at-bat before. He's toast. He doesn't have it. It's time to move on. He was only supposed to get an inning two. It was a bullpen game. There's no reason to try to stretch him. None. So, Chase Anderson, not good today. 1 2/3, 3 hits, 5 runs, 5 earned, 3 walks. Gave up 2 home runs on 53 pitches. Moves his ERA up to 5.52. Not good. Not good. Now, with regards to the result and the effect on the game, I 100% blame Cora. I don't know. I don't recall anything in the real recent past where I just felt like it was the absolute wrong decision, and I knew it going in. I didn't expect a grand slam, but I didn't expect it to end well, and I just knew he wasn't going to get him out. So it was a confluence of two issues. Chase Anderson didn't have it today, and Cora had no feel for the game in the moment. And I also blame Bailey and anybody else in the dugout on the coaching staff that had a pulse. Somebody's got to say something. It was so obvious. And for that to happen, you know, it was really frustrating. Now I'm going to spin it to a positive. Sox fought like hell, guys. They got back in the game. They fought like hell. The bullpen was really good. Martin gave up an unearned run. Otherwise, they gave up 5 hits the rest of the game, and they really gave your offense a chance to claw back into the game, which they did. And until the circus acted, I think it was the eighth inning, until the circus acted, it looked like a big league attempt to try to come back and win a game, and I thought there was a chance. You add a run late on, again, an unearned run. It's back to the circus music, but so there's a positive there in the way the balance of the roster responded, getting him back in the game and giving him a chance to win. But you can't start off a bullpen game like that for the reasons I've stated.
Terry.
So Chase Anderson, that was like a dumpster dive type move to bring him onto the roster. And he's so bad that at some point in spring training, he was with the Pirates, and the Pirates said, "We're good, bro. We're releasing you." And the Red Sox jumped on him. And I mean, at some point you're going to need someone to eat up innings, but he has not been good for the last 4 years or so. In the shortened 2020 season, call it what you want, but he had an ERA over 7. The next year, in 14 games, 9 of which were starts, an ERA just under 7. 6.38 the next year. Last year, 5.42 with two different teams, Tampa and Colorado. And now we have him. And the bigger picture here, the Red Sox don't have a Chase Anderson problem. We have a sustainability problem as far as our starting pitching goes. We got pretty fortunate in game 2 of the series with Cooper Criswell. And I still had the Red Sox winning because I just thought we were going to get to Carrasco, having seen him just a week ago, him not being an overpowering guy. And that's how it worked out. And Criswell pitched a very good game over 5 innings. Only gave up 3 hits, actually. And then I think we lucked out last weekend with Josh Winkowski. We're gonna ride that again against the Cubs. I don't think it'll work out quite as well this time, but this is an organizational problem to have a guy like Chase Anderson going in there basically being an automatic loss for you. And this is how it's been since 2020. Yeah. for the Red Sox.
And it speaks to a depth problem in terms of, you know, starting pitching, because they don't have like that next, you know, big arm ready to come up and, you know, okay, one guy goes down. All right, let's bring up, you know, the AAA arms. They really don't have that right now. Chase Anderson himself, I mean, he hasn't been good since 2018. So it's not like this is a shock. I mean, you go through his numbers since 2018. It's atrocious. His ERAs are, you know, through the moon. You know, to the point where even the Pirates are like, yeah, no thanks. We don't need you. So it's, you know, like, it's easy to pick on him. It's low hanging fruit. Get it. But like, it does just speak to the larger problem. Like, pitchers around the league really are dropping like flies. But now that epidemic has reached the Red Sox too. I mean, Nick Pivetta, who never gets hurt, goes on the IL. Brian Bayo, out of nowhere, seemingly has a lat problem. Garrett Whitlock, shocker. Garrett Whitlock got hurt because you turned him into a starter again. Didn't see that one coming, except no, we did. So they kind of did that one to themselves. But I mean, thank God for Tanner Houck and Cutter Crawford. And thank God that guys like Cooper Criswell and Josh Winkowski are stepping in and, you know, keeping this thing afloat a little bit. But then you get to Chase Anderson. It's like, that's where it falls apart. You know, that's where your depth officially just kind of runs out. And it's kind of sad that they don't have any other options in AAA or anything like that that is better than Chase Anderson. So I don't know if they look for, you know, if there's a guy in, you know, the May 1st opt-outs, if there's a guy in that list that they might look at or something like that, or if they're just going to hope that it was a blip on the radar for Anderson and, you know, his next outing will be a little bit better. But you saw that one coming today. Bases loaded, Ramirez at the plate. We all saw it coming.
And in the moment, we saw it coming, but he pitched two outings against Pittsburgh, both two innings, no runs, two hits, two strikeouts. And he wasn't coming in to throw five innings. He was coming in to try to get six outs. And, you know, I don't know that I'm ready to write the player off over today. I thought he shouldn't have been out there to face Ramirez, certainly. And I was calling it the at-bat before. He had 13 innings pitched, four earned runs coming into today. So he hadn't been bad. That in the moment he didn't have it and he was put in a spot that I think should have been managed better. The way he pitched in Pittsburgh, you'd think he'd be able to get through the lineup once. But it didn't work out that way today. Obviously a better lineup. Don't get me wrong. But really all it was one guy that was expected to throw multiple innings, you know? So I don't know why they chose to start him because they've used Bernardino in that role. Bernardino's ERA right now is 0.93. It's been really good, and he's done it before. So I don't know why they flip-flopped that because Anderson hadn't pitched in the first two games, so he was going to pitch today. Just I don't know why it had to be in the first inning and not some other spot, but – he got through the first, he got a couple outs, and he just couldn't finish it off, and we all knew what was coming.
I think Anderson, I'm not saying throw him off the team, but I think he does have value in the sixth, seventh, and eighth innings when you need him to piggyback a little bit. And I think that's better for his mindset. You know, send him out there for an inning. If he gets through it pretty cleanly, send him out for another one. I think he's even had a couple of three-inning appearances. I think he piggybacked off of Houck, and I'm good with that. But when he's the first pitcher onto the mound to start the game, the career numbers are just horrendous, and today was a reflection of that.
There's a mindset in a starter. It's totally different. You go to bed knowing you're the guy the next day. When you're in the bullpen, you may not even pitch. Your cleats are on, and all of a sudden the phone rings, and it's Anderson, get ready. You got the seventh. Maybe he's just a guy that doesn't have that mindset, that he tightens up because he's got to think about it. I think, at least for purposes of today, he just didn't have good stuff. He wasn't sharp, and I think everyone knew it except for one guy that should have made the move, or two guys. Bailey's culpable here.
Yep. I agree. And certainly I'm not writing the player off. I mean, Red Sox don't have a choice. You know, they need warm bodies in that bullpen. And, you know, he's a guy that can give you a couple of innings. As Jeremy pointed out, going into this game, he really hadn't been that bad this year. So Rough game for him. I agree. Cora and Bailey need to be more on the ball there in terms of realizing the situation and, you know, pulling them out of there when they should have. But it's the way it goes. At least the team did fight back. You're right. They made a game of it, but it was just too little too late, unfortunately. So with that, we will wrap things up there. Keep an eye out for our series prediction show. We'll be giving our picks for the Chicago Cubs series this weekend. We'll also have a different kind of show coming your way this weekend. We're going to talk a little bit more about our beloved manager in terms of his future here and maybe his future elsewhere. So keep an eye out for that episode as well. And then, of course, the weekend crew will have you guys Monday morning to recap the Chicago Cubs series. So everyone have a good weekend. And we will talk to you later. Take care.